Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversations. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines. And in this little segment, we are talking to owners of firms who are doing things differently than our father's or our grandmother's accounting firms. My guest today is Brandon Hall, founder and managing partner of Hall CPA, co-founder of Tax Smart Investors, and co-host of the Tax Smart Real Estate Investor Podcast. Very busy man you are. How are you today, Brandon?
I'm doing great, Liz. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, you really piqued my interest with a few things that you put on Twitter. We'll get into that a little bit. Now, to start, can you tell the listeners a little bit about your firm, where you're located, what you do, and how you came to be, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So my firm, we have about 40 people in the United States, another 20 offshore between the Philippines and India. We service real estate investors across the country. So we've got about 800 clients and we provide them with tax planning, preparation, and accounting services. I physically live in Raleigh, North Carolina, but the firm is remote. So everybody just lives and works out of their home, wherever they are in the United States. And we've been like that since day one. So I founded the firm back in 2015, 2016, and we've been remote ever since. My original vision was I was going to be able to travel the world and service clients at the same time. I was following this like influencer guy that was running this remote business at the time. I was like, I want to model my firm after that because I would love to be at the beach and be able to just, you know, crank out tax returns or something. I've since done zero traveling, but some other people in my firm have done some traveling, which is cool. So I'm kind of like living vicariously through them. I just can't get away from my like 3-4 screens, you know, like when you're in the HQ here, you got all of your screens, you can see everything. And it's just, yeah. Anyway, we joke about it every once in a while at the firm, but, I got my start back in 2015, 16. I had, I graduated college 2013, took a job with PwC in their consulting, department, and then switched over to Ernst & Young about a year and a half into that. And then I was at Ernst & Young about a year and a half before jumping into this business full time. So did about 3 years at the Big Four before really jumping into this and trying to grow it.
Great. Now, on your website and in your newsletter, by the way, people should sign up for your newsletter.
Thanks.
It's pretty interesting. You talk about building the modern firm. Now,
yeah.
What do you mean by the modern firm?
A modern firm to me is one that's people first, one that inspires change in the industry, and one that creates raving fans out of clients. You know, I believe that we can treat people like adults and trust people to get work done. And that's our kind of methodology at our firm. I don't really care what time you log on and show up. I don't really care what days of the week you work, as long as the work kind of gets done. So, you know, it's just a firm for adults, I guess.
Right.
When I was building it, I was just thinking, how do I want to be managed? And, or how would I have wanted to be managed? Like if PwC or EY would have treated me a little bit differently, what would have kept me there rather than like jumping ship and doing this? And it's just, I don't think it's actually that modern. It's just modern to the accounting industry. So we fix price everything. We don't track time. We are fully remote. We don't see our clients face to face. We do have a team trip once a year. We just got back from Cancun. That was a blast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, you know, it's just, but the leadership style is really what's the modern thing about it. You know, we're not looking at time data to make performance decisions. And we just really trust our staff to get the work done. Now, I will say that, you know, we aspire to be people first. We aspire to create raving fans and we aspire to be innovative and, you know, set the trend that other firms can. follow, but you know, we make mistakes too. So I don't want to give the impression that we have it all figured out. We are always trying to figure out, and that's the promise that we make to our team, is we're going to make mistakes. You're still going to have some long hours every once in a while. Like this past tax season, we had our new seniors, either from promotion or from outside hires, ended up working a pretty significant amount. Our experienced seniors were like, this is the best tax season we've ever had, and their hours were very reasonable. So like the changes we made worked for the people that had the experience, didn't work for the new people new to the role or new to the firm. And so that tells us we got to do better onboarding and training and upskilling and all that we are working on. So we're moving in the right direction. We're really trying to smooth out busy season and get it to a point where clients love it and employees love it.
Well, I got to give you kudos for that, because that was certainly not the experience that I ever had in public accounting.
And not
the experience that a lot of people ever have.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
now,
and if you don't mind, like I think that I know the reason. There's a lot of reasons to why you have a busy season. The most glaringly obvious is that we have hard deadlines, right? So we have an April 15th and a 10/15 deadline. And so even if you extend everybody, you're still going to have a busy season. It might just be a prolonged busy season because you're still doing, a full years of work within 9 total months by the time you finally get documents uploaded and then everything filed. So the question is, how do you get all that work done in a short amount of time, relatively speaking? You don't have a full 12 months to do it. So that's the big reason. But the other big reason that I've noticed, and I've noticed this talking to other firm owners who are running $5, $10, $20 million firms, as well as smaller firms that are trying to break a million or who have just crossed a million and they're trying to double to 2, 3, and 4, the partners do a lot of the tax work. Firms try to make way too much money at tax prep. That I think is the problem. I know that this is like, oh, it's a business, we're supposed to make money, but my approach has shifted to being tax preparation is going to be kind of the spot that we want all of our clients to be sticky to. But it's not the place we're going to try to make a lot of money. We want to make a little bit, but we're not going to go and try to make 30% on every dollar, whereas a lot of other firms are. And sometimes firms can't figure out their workflow or their staffing, so they make their partners go work and do all the reviews and talk to all the clients, and then they're still clearing 30-35%. But the partner pay is not on payroll, so it's like, how much are you really clearing here, right? But for us, so what we're trying to compress that margin. And basically what I mean is we overhire. So that's our strategy going forward. We almost did it successfully this year, but like I said, we missed it a little bit on the new hires and the new seniors. So we'll fix that. But next year we've got really good data in place. So I'm really excited for how next busy season goes, because I think that we'll actually hit it on the staff side. Cause my vision is like, if you can have a great workflow and your clients love it, and your staff loves it, then they're going to stay forever. And then it's just a matter of creating a flywheel of services and businesses that these clients that are getting your annual tax prep need. So the annual tax prep is this thing that nobody really wants at the end of the day, but everybody needs. And so if you can just keep them there and then say, hey, by the way, we've got this other thing that can help you, it's transactional analysis, advisory, wealth planning, accounting, whatever it is, that's where you go and you try to make your money. So that's kind of my approach to tax prep, and we'll see if it works.
Well, I think that's a really interesting idea, and it's not the first time that I've heard somebody talk about tax prep being should be sort of a loss leader. I mean, a while back I talked to Blake Oliver on this podcast, and he thought that tax prep should be free. Not even just not, a low margin thing, but free, which is pretty radical.
That's pretty radical. Yeah. I don't know how that would run. I mean, you would have to really have a significant amount of those flywheel services and businesses built out, because when you get into tax preparation at scale, that free, I think, could really hurt your ability to hire and retain amazing people, just because you wouldn't be able to afford them. You'd be eating too much into the advisory or the other services, or it's free, right? But I've got a $10,000 package that I'm selling my client, and now I've got to come up with some sort of allocation to tax prep somehow. I don't know. I've seen people try to do that too. So that definitely a radical approach, not our approach, but I'd love to see if somebody could do it.
Well, I'm waiting to talk to somebody who actually is doing that. Now, you mentioned that you're a people first firm. What does that look like in practice?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, we're not going to micromanage you. We have unlimited vacation. We have unlimited sick days. I know some people are like, unlimited is a scam. But like, the way that I look at it is, you're an adult. I'm not going to sit here and micromanage your vacation. I'm not going to micromanage your sick days. I don't want you to feel bad about taking a sick day or going to the doctor. It's just thinking about like how do we merge work a little bit better with our lives. And so it's just thinking about how to lead people well, manage people well, but not be all up in their business, essentially. Then the other thing that we do that is the people first concept is really that kind of what I was talking about. It's, hey, this tax preparation thing that we do every single year where people work 80 hours a week, we don't like that, right? And again, we haven't fully figured it out, but we're always testing and trying to figure it out. So a non people first business would say, I don't care, just work the 80 hours and we'll find somebody next year to replace you. But me, like, I care about every single one of my staff and I want them to be successful. And I don't want them to, be slogging away on tax returns really at any point in the year. So even if we miss it, we're still sitting here trying to figure out, how do we not do that again? How do we not have that experience again? Because we want our people to have a personal life, even during busy season. Yes. We want them to have balance. So again, we don't hit it all the time, but that's the idea. It's how do we enrich the lives of our people?
I don't really like that, enriching the lives of people. There's a tech company I do a lot of writing for, and the CEO talks about leadership as helping his team become better as human beings.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, if you look across accounting firms, who are the managers? The managers are people that billed 2,500 hours last year. They're the people that are really great at pumping out work, right? So, so what a firm does to keep somebody that's really great at pumping out work is they promote them. They give you the next title, and then they give you a big salary bump and all that, right? At our firm, we don't do that. Like, a manager is a leader. A manager is somebody that knows how to inspire and motivate people, right? It's not somebody that can just second level review a tax return. And we're still kind of early in this game. We've only got 40 people in the US, like I said, but the benefits are significant. I mean, it's just like, when people will generally quit managers before they'll actually quit any sort of business. And so if you are not figuring out how to make your people's lives holistically better, not just work life, but total life. What are their goals and motivations? What do they want to accomplish in life? What's their career path? How much money do they want to make? Right. Like, what do they believe about wealth building, family, all that stuff? If you as a leader can't figure out how to enrich that person's life, you will lose them at some point. Yeah. And so for me, it's great that you can, we don't track time, but bill 2,500 hours. That's amazing, right? And I'll reward you for that. I'm not going to make you a manager.
No. Those are not good managers.
Yeah. We run a DISC survey on everybody. It's a personality assessment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People with high I are generally very good at the relationship building, the management piece. So it's a really cool really cool survey if you ever get to check it out.
I will check that out. Yeah. Now, it sounds like with an approach like that, you wouldn't have as many problems with talent as a lot of firms today are having. Is that true? Has that helped you?
Yeah, definitely. We typically don't, the people that leave our firm are typically, what do you say, like good turnover or whatever, whatever that term is. We don't really have people that turn over as a result of us not wanting them to, or hoping that they wouldn't. So, yeah, I mean, it's been great. From a talent perspective, it's awesome being a remote firm because we can hire anywhere. So we get a little bit of a competitive advantage because I'm not looking just in my Raleigh ecosystem and just competing with all the other Raleigh firms. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So I can hire anywhere. I can onboard from anywhere. And then it's just a matter of making sure my management team is doing the things necessary on an ongoing basis to inspire and motivate the people beneath them to do their best work and to live their best lives. And I know that sounds all fluffy, but that's truly how we approach it, and it works really well.
Oh, that's great. Now, does that apply to clients as well?
What do you mean?
The people first approach?
We love our clients. We want to create raving fans out of our clients. That's our big thing, is create raving fans. There is a great book called Unreasonable Hospitality. It's a big yellow cover if you Google this. It's written by the guy that owns 11 Madison Park, which is like the number one restaurant in the world. It's located in New York City. And it's if you haven't been, you should go. It's an amazing experience, which actually made me buy the book. So one of the examples in his book is, so his whole thing is, we want to be unreasonably hospitable. So we want to just like set the bar super high for what hospitality means. We want to like shock people and create these amazing experiences for our restaurant diners. One of the things that their servers did, without being prompted by leadership, the server just did this one day. They recognized that the diners that were coming in to the restaurant, this is fine dining, so it's like a 3-hour event. So the diners coming in would have to go get up halfway through their meal and go put more quarters in the parking meter to keep the parking meter running. So the server just decided to do that one day, and the reaction was so positive that they like rolled it out as this thing that all the diners, what they do is they go, when they meet the diners, the servers will ask, hey, where did you park? What does your car look like? Are you metered or whatever? And then they'll go and put quarters in halfway through the meal to extend. So that's the type of stuff that we try to look for with our clients. It's not something that you have to go like I think accountants think, oh, I have to give free tax advice, right? Or I have to do some free consulting because that's going to wow a client. No, it's not going to wow a client. It's just going to make them want more free stuff from you. But like something that costs 50 cents to enhance the experience with the firm, that's amazing, right? So we have our team, they'll send books, they'll send cards. Well, we're always thinking about ways to enhance the actual experience with the firm. This is the first year ever that our clients have reached out to us unsolicited and given us extremely positive feedback on tax preparation. Like last year was bad. The year before that was bad. Every year before that was bad. If you would have told me last year that it's possible for clients to like love tax preparation, I would have just laughed you out of the room. But that's exactly what happened. I have a great leadership team. They figured out how to get it done and how to deliver an amazing experience. And they did it. And the results are speaking for themselves. So are we people first for the clients? Yes, but we kind of think about it in terms of creating raving fans. How do you get people to spread the word that, man, this firm has it figured out, and they created a really good experience for me with the services that I got from them?
That's wonderful. That's just wonderful. Now you've been making changes as you've gone through your growth. What are some of the most impactful shifts your firm has made in the last few years?
Oof. The biggest change for me was installing the right leadership team. So instead of looking for people that had great technical skills, I started looking for people that had great leadership skills. And then I promoted them, or I pushed them into leadership roles where they really flourished. I would not be here today if it was not for the amazing people that that we've hired all throughout our firm, but most definitely on that leadership team. These people are phenomenal. And the cool thing is, and this is, I don't know what type of demographic listens to this podcast, but if you have any young listeners, you know, I'm 32 years old. My partners are 30 and 31. My leadership team is 28 through 32 years old. I mean, you do not have to have 20 years of experience to be a leader. You just have to know how to motivate and inspire people. You have to know how to synthesize information and data and make the right call 6 times out of 10, right? It doesn't even have to be 10 times out of 10. It's just more, you make the right call more than you don't. So yeah, the most significant change has really just been me leaning into building a great leadership team. And then we've made some changes on the marketing and stuff like that. Like my partner and I create a ton of content, and we've started to try to professionalize our marketing team and our sales team and really systematize things to get ourselves out of the day-to-day work and stuff like that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, definitely installing the right leaders is key.
That's it. You know, and I've heard that from so many other people, that it's the leaders, you know, having a trusted lieutenant that you can pass the work off to. You can tell them what you want, what your expectations are, and it just multiplies your vision across so many people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, in one of your recent newsletters, you described a strategy that firm owners can use to completely eliminate busy season. What is that strategy? We kind of alluded to it a little earlier.
Yeah. So again, busy season is a direct result of having too much work and not having enough capacity to deliver the work in the expected timelines to deliver the work. And again, even if you extended everything, you would still have capacity constraints. It's the formula is going to change a little bit for you. So I think that a lot of people talk about a lot of different things. You know, they talk about pricing, they talk about extensions, they talk about software and automations and AI and all that. But at the end of the day, if your partners are trying to make too much money in tax preparation, you will never get rid of busy season. So the only way that you will ever get rid of busy season is when partners say, let's stop trying to make money with tax preparation and let's create a flywheel of services and businesses that our tax preparation clients can utilize, and we'll make our money there because we don't have these insane constraints on the workflow. So that's the secret. And I fully believe that. Like I said, we took a big swing at that this year, and we hit it for about half of our staff, our managers for the most part. I think the last week was pretty crazy, but our managers for the most part were like, this is a pretty smooth busy season. Our seniors and our associates the week leading up to the deadline worked about 35 hours. I mean, don't get me wrong though. Some of them had pulled some pretty gnarly hours before that, but still it was like, okay, so we didn't quite get it, but we're seeing some pretty good improvements here. Cause prior years, our entire team would be up at midnight, you know, filing tax returns together and drinking wine and stuff. And it's just a miserable experience. So what I did this year, the reason that we even got close is because I set a lower margin target for the tax prep team, and we ended up hiring more people than we would have otherwise hired. And now that I have data, I know next year, I think I know what that margin target actually needs to be to not have a busy season. And so that's the goal, is next year, not have a busy season.
That's an amazing approach, but I can see that a lot of firm owners are going to say, oh, hell no, I'm not going to even try that.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why do you think firm owners won't do that? I mean, other than just greed.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you like, we're going to be a $9 million firm this year, so 3.5 will be tax preparation, right? Which I think is actually probably a little high. Maybe no, it's about right. 3.5 will be tax preparation. So 3.5 on 9, what is that? 40%. I know some other firms run 50%, 60% tax prep. So if a significant amount of your revenue is coming from tax prep, you have to make money at it. You know, or you feel like you have to make money at it. The other issue is the way that firms pay partners. Firms do not structure their partnerships like I have structured my partnership. So they have to make money at tax prep. Otherwise, they won't be able to pay their partners.
Right.
So they're just stuck. Like you can't, in order to like my margin target next year on tax prep is like 10 to 15%. Right. So how do you pay partners on 10 to 15%? You don't. That's my reserve account, right? For my net profit going forward. I'm not making money on tax prep. But because we make so much money on advisory and accounting, and because we are dedicated to building a flywheel of services out and a flywheel of businesses out that can all leverage the clients that we have in the tax preparation service line, we're okay with that. And the way that we structure our partnership, it all works. So it's just, I think firms, if you run that traditional partnership model and, you know, you've got your firms are too focused on making money on tax prep. I mean, that's why the funny thing is, though, is that a lot of firms don't make much money on tax prep. This is the funny thing. A lot of firms don't make much money on tax prep, but what they do is they make their partner go bill 1800 hours, you know, slinging tax returns. And so then all of a sudden they're making 35%. But it's like, dude, if you took that partner out, you'd be right there at that 15%. Like, you know, you're not making money on tax prep, but it's just hard for people to accept. So for me, I take my leadership team and I actually try to get them out of client service as much as possible, out of tax prep, out of talking to clients as much as I possibly can, because I want us to focus on the higher leverage stuff, building the business, building the flywheels, building the additional services, leading the team, inspiring the team, staffing correctly. You know, and I know that like a lot of firms figure that out as they scale because they do build these leadership teams that don't do a lot of service. But you got the Rosenberg survey that says that, you know, I think it's firms $10 to $20 million, all the partner average billable is like 1300 hours. It's like, what are you guys doing? Why is an executive still servicing clients? Makes no sense.
I would agree with you there, you know, and I witnessed a lot of firms where the partners were still deep in the weeds doing the work. And some of that was because of their leadership style. And, you know, that's just the way it goes.
I'm a big fan of rolling up my sleeves and working alongside people. I sat down and prepared and reviewed tax returns last year alongside the team. But, you know, the difference is that it's just not a permanent solution, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just think that if firms kind of rethought their structure and you know, tried to run up more like a technology organization and structure, then you would think about how to staff that tax team out a little bit more appropriately. And I think you might be surprised with the results, both from a client facing perspective and from a staffing perspective.
I think you're right. Now we've talked about some of the things that you've done, but sometimes the key to moving forward is stopping doing some things. What is one thing you stopped doing that made a big difference?
I have stopped so many things. I mean, I think it's very easy for people to look at where I'm at today and say, wow, like you made all the right calls. But the reality is I took the shotgun approach to a lot of things. I mean, it was just, let's just test this and see if it works. And a lot of things blew up in my face and don't work. So, you know, the one of the major things that we stopped at a few years ago, we were trying to build our own project management software. And so I sunk probably 150K into trying to build this, and then realized I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know how to build a software solution. I don't know how to run a tech team. So I killed that project after I had made that investment. That was something significant. But I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that we try and then walk back, but nothing like, maybe nothing super significant. I mean, we're always like testing different software, and we'll stop using one and start using another. I don't know if I really have a good answer for that. I just there are a ton of things that we stop doing on a consistent basis, and maybe that's why I don't have, maybe that's why there's not anything clearly popping up in my mind, is because we stop so many things.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that you stopped doing is you stopped promoting managers based on technical ability.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really big thing that you have stopped doing.
Yes. Yes. I would 100% agree. As you know, again, I'm 32 years old. I've made a lot of mistakes with managing and leading people myself. And so as I've grown as a leader, I've also learned what I need as leaders to lead the organization. And once you start to get that clarity, yeah, you start to realize like, oops, this person's in the wrong seat. And there's nothing that I can do about it aside from move them out of the organization. So yes, many painful stops with that. It's cool because it's now very clear in this organization that technical skills kind of get you in the door, but you really have to have those leadership skills if you want to move up in my organization.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine that there are some people who are quite happy with that purely technical role.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because when they're like, I don't even want to lead people, but I thought that was my only options. Like, well, no, man, we can carve out a separate little path for you here. You can be a technical person, and yeah, you can be the guy that throws out all the research, all the citations when people are going back and forth and need help. Right. 100%.
You can be the expert in 1031 exchanges or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You become the go-to person for something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's perfect. Now, you've talked about making mistakes. What would you say was the most valuable mistake you've ever made? The one that you learned the most from?
That's a good question. It's definitely related to people. I would say the most valuable mistake that I've made, and I'm very thankful, even though these are all very painful mistakes, I'm very thankful that I made these mistakes at a young age. The most valuable learning lessons have all come from promoting people too early, giving in because I feel like I should emotionally versus objectively. So like I had an instance where I had two people come up to me and say that they had like talked to each other and say they needed raises and they needed promotions. And at the time, I was still green as a leader. So I gave them both. And then a couple months later, one quit because they didn't want to talk to clients, which is what that promotion entailed. And then the other quit as well a couple months after that. Those mistakes of putting people into spots where they could not actually perform at the level that spot required them to was a valuable learning lesson for me early on in my career. And actually, that probably is the most valuable learning lesson for me, is just promoting people into roles that they cannot perform. I think it's called the Peter principle, where somebody's good here and then you promote them to the next level and they're good there and you keep promoting them until finally they hit this level that they are unable to perform. And so they end up failing. And if instead you just kept them at that one level, and if you could explain to them as to why it makes sense for them and they can accept that, then everybody's happy. But a lot of times people can't accept staying at that level because ego's involved, that we've been taught as a society that we must move up the chain. But the reality is that you might not be very good at the next role. And that's what I've learned. So now what I do with my team is I say, you have to have a pattern of success at the next level before you actually get that level. And it's not a long pattern of success. We're looking 3-6 months, but like, show me that you know how to talk to clients, right? Show me that you love talking to clients. Show me that you can hold an effective one-on-one with your direct report. Show me that you've upskilled your direct report in some way, or you've pushed them to the next level, right? So now I look for these patterns before I'll ever make a decision on promoting somebody. And that doesn't mean that you can't have early promotions. Again, like we've got people coming right up through even to partnership here over the next 12 months that are going to be in their 20s. So it doesn't mean that you have to work super long. That's not the point. The point though is that you show the capacity and the ability to handle the next role. Whereas in the past, I would kind of just give in. Like if you came and yelled at me loud enough, I'd be like, okay, yeah, sure. Here's the bump. Here's the new responsibility. And then, oh, you failed. I wonder why. So that was probably the most valuable learning lesson. And I'm glad it happened early in my career, because I think that it helps me curate the leadership team that I have today.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you must provide your team with quite a bit of leadership training and personal development.
Well,
or do they kind of pick it up on their own, or what?
It's a combination. So we don't have anything systematic in terms of leadership training and development. We don't have any sort of formal system or training program or anything. That's actually one of my goals this year. One of my strategic goals this year is to build that out. And luckily, Kaylin Deaver, who is a rock star in my firm, is actually taking that on. And she's starting to build that out because she's an amazing leader. What I have done is I schedule a 1-hour coaching session with people every week. So every week, it's really just investing a significant amount of time into people on a continuous basis. And that conversation is just what issues are you struggling with this week? Whether they be people, process, workflow, clients, pricing, whatever. And then it's just coaching them through, well, here's how I would handle that. Or here's when this happened to me and here's what I did and here was the result, right? Like, somebody brought this problem to me one time and I said this and they were not happy with that. So don't do that this time, right? So it's just really helping people on a consistent basis. That's what I've done. I've spent a significant amount of time. Like instead of billing 1300 hours a year to clients, I spend 1300 hours a year with eight of my higher level staff. And then I tell them, you got to go do that with your staff. And then it cascades down. So in terms of like formalities, programs, we don't have anything yet. But we are trying to figure out how do you take that coaching model that we've kind of like been using throughout our history. And how do you formalize that a little bit more to get people to upskill faster and see results faster and better. But it's just spending a significant amount of time with people.
Well, even that's a significant investment. And if I had a hat on, I would take my hat off to you.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, you know, I know that we've got analytical people listening to this, right? They're like, why would you ever spend that much time with people when I could bill 1300 hours? But it's like, you know, if I can coach one person and then they can coach two people, I'm multiplying my time, right? That's the highest leverage activity that I have when it comes to people, or really when it comes to firm building at all. There's two extremely high leverage activities. One is media, right? That's why you see me all over content and everything. Like I'm trying to smother the internet with my content, good or bad, you know, but really just trying to get people to come to me for real estate taxation, accounting, and advisory services. So media, you control a bunch of eyeballs. So that's a super high leverage activity. And the next highest leverage activity in a service firm is coaching staff, because they're going to go and coach more staff, and in that it just cascades. So it's the highest value use of your time, but it takes a lot of times people cannot wrap their mind around it. And I've noticed it even in my own firm, when we try to do this with highly, highly, highly analytical people, it's very difficult for them to decouple their understanding or to reinvent for themselves their understanding of what drives value in an organization. Because yes, preparing a tax return and billing a client $3,000 is valuable, but it's not as valuable as coaching and leading and teaching three people who can all deliver $3,000 tax returns. And so that's the most challenging piece with highly analytical people, is helping them understand that what got them to where they are is not what is going to get you to the next level and to the next level and to the next level. You have to adapt and you have to mold, and you really have to become a leader. So that's my, like, if I can keep 40 people humming along and happy, that's the highest leverage thing. I will not take a client call when I can otherwise go and spend an hour with somebody and help them through a problem.
That's a really different approach than most firm leaders. You know, they would rather, you know, at most they might take you to lunch occasionally.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as spending an hour on just focused coaching and helping resolve challenges and to figure out new strategies that this person can use, mm-hmm. and that they can incorporate to become the best that they can be.
Absolutely.
That's great. Yeah. Now, what advice do you have for firm owners and aspiring firm leaders who want to create better experiences for their people, for their clients, and most importantly, for themselves?
Yeah. The first thing to understand is that you can absolutely, and this really goes for anybody, regardless of your role right now. Like, if you're a senior tax accountant and you're trying to think about, can I become a partner and what does that look like? And, or if you're already running a business and, you know, going's getting tough. Cause dude, I had some years where I had long stretches where it was mentally taxing. I got a therapist. It was bad. But if you can get through those long periods, and if you can build a team, a leadership team, and well, really just a team, a strong team of people that, where you're not killing them with work on a continuous basis, and you're not being greedy, you know, you're not trying to clear 40% on your tax preparation work. Like, if you can change some of your approaches to scaling a firm, you can absolutely have great work-life balance, make a ton of money, and have people that love working for you and clients that love being serviced by you. You can have all of those things. And I say that because somebody told me recently that somebody else told them that you can't have all of those things, like something's got to give. And that is BS. You can have all of those things. You just have to change how your model works. But for me, with my staff, it's really just a constant game of, look, we're going to always try to improve. I'll tell them what I'm trying to do. I'll tell them what the expected result is. And I'll also tell them there's a good chance this isn't going to work, right? because a lot of what we do does not work. Like I said, last year, we set a margin target and it worked for our clients really well. It worked for some of our staff really well. It did not work for some of our staff at all. So it's just, but they don't leave the firm. They stay because they know, okay, that sucked, but I also know that Brandon is truly trying to fix this, so I'll stick around for one more busy season and see what happens, right? So it's just trying to proactively communicate to staff, to clients, to everybody in the process, what you're working on, what you're trying to do, and why. What's the reason behind it? You can have it all. There are very challenging times, so be honest with your staff. Tell them, you know, there's the risk here. And here's what happens if it fails. You're going to work 70 hours a week, but don't worry, I will be right there beside you, because I'm not going to just let you go do that without me doing that as well. You know, I think people respect that, and they will give you another chance. They'll even give you two additional chances. Three times, they're probably like, I'm out. But people will give you a few chances.
That's right. Well, you know, this is just a refreshing take on how to lead a firm, and something that so few people try to do. But I do sense that with people of your generation and younger coming up through the ranks, you know, the accounting profession is not going to be like it has been. It'll
be interesting to see. I think from a work-life balance perspective, like I do think that we'll figure that out. Not like us, my firm, but I think that my generation will figure that out. But I don't know how I think structurally things are going to change, because firms that have run this partnership model forever, like you're not going to, what I'm talking about resonates with you, you will not be able to change a big firm inside out. It's not going to work. So like you have to go and you have to quit. You have to quit, start your own firm, partner with somebody else, you know, take a book of business with you, whatever, but you have to go do your own thing, because there's so much structurally wrong with large traditional accounting firms that you will never even get close to what I'm talking about. And it's not your fault. It's just because of all that, all of the things that have been going structurally into that firm for years and decades and centuries. You know, like, first we got to remove the billable hour. That's step one. Step two is we got to have leaders that are actually leaders, not just second level reviewers, right? Like, our managers can't just be technical people. They got to be people that can lead teams. Step three is my partner's got to be okay with not making money on tax prep. Boom, half the firm's gone, right? Like, you're not gonna get there. So there's just so many structural problems. And even if you can get there, you've got all the deferred comp issues with these retiring partners. Right. They've got millions and millions of dollars that you're going to owe them. So what do? You hire, you promote 15 new partners to pay for the old partner that's leaving. There's just so many issues, I think. So I don't know how the industry goes the direction that I'm going, other than starting up new firms that start with this mindset from the get-go. And again, it's not easy, because my firm, it's all based on data. And what do you do when you have no data? you just take big guesses, and you hope, you cross your fingers and you hope it works. And man, we made a lot of bad calls and mistakes. There was a lot of pain growing this thing. But that's also why I post on Twitter, and I've got the newsletters, because I know there's a lot of people that look at what we're doing and say, that's cool, I want to do that too. And I'm trying to kind of help people get over or avoid those potholes that I did not see until I was 10 feet down, looking back up and going, how the hell do I get out of here?
Exactly. You know, and some of what you're talking about is why I counsel some of my other former coworkers, don't be a partner in this firm.
Yeah.
Don't do it. If you want to be a partner, go out on your own, steal your clients, buy them, do whatever.
Yeah, it's a tough call, and it's not for everybody, because being a partner in a firm is, in my opinion, and I know, you know, we there's different trains of thoughts out there, but in my opinion, if you're a partner in a firm that's been around for a long time, you're still effectively an employee. You're just a super highly compensated employee that's got a lot of responsibilities. If you quit the firm and go start your own thing, you are a true entrepreneur at that point. You're scrubbing toilets, you know, like you're doing all the dirty work. And that is a lot. That's asking a lot. And not everybody, it's not even that like people aren't cut out for it. I think people will do it, but you just got to be ready to, you know, eat crap for a while, for a potentially extended period of time. And that can be really hard, especially if I'm about to make partner at a firm and I'm about to get that 400K paycheck and things are looking good, and you know, but yeah, I mean, you're really getting married there, so you got to be careful.
I completely agree. And I think that's a good cautionary note to end our conversation on.
Okay.
Now, if listeners want to connect with you, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm at @BHallCPA. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I think I'm just like /BrandonHallCPA, something like that. If you Google Brandon Hall CPA LinkedIn, I think you'll find me. I've got a newsletter. If you go to Twitter or LinkedIn, go to my profile, you can see the newsletter. It's for firm owners. Actually, I haven't posted in like 3 weeks because I've been taking a break, but we'll be kicking that back up and basically just talk about like what I'm doing and what works and what doesn't work and hope that it helps people.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share your experiences and your wisdom with listeners. And I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, Liz, for having me on. This is fun. Appreciate it.
This was fun. This was.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.